Machine learning is really hard, right? It's just so complex that many people probably think it's not for them. But it doesn't have to be that way. Today, I'm talking with Adam Geike, the writer behind the Machine Learning is Fun blog, which he's written for people who are curious about machine learning, but have no idea where to start. In addition, Adam has compiled his writing into some new ebooks for executives and developers that you can download from his site. In this episode, we're going to be going after a topic that's more relevant for that first audience. Specifically, we're going to talk about data and how that makes applications and machine learning work. If you're in the C-suite, stick around. I think you'll find this very interesting indeed. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Georgian Impact Podcast. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Could take me a little bit through your background, how you got to where you are today.
Sure. I've been a software developer my whole career. First, when I was a kid programming, you know, when I was 7 years old and throughout my childhood, just because I was interested in it. Then I had a pretty traditional background. I went to Georgia Tech for computer science. But when I went to college, there wasn't such a thing as like a machine learning major. And I wasn't even really interested in that point. It was much later in my career that I learned about statistics and machine learning and how to apply those to software. And it kind of opened my mind to the whole world of more things you could do with a computer. And about 10 years ago, I started kind of poking around with that and reading and learning. And then from there, I grew into building machine learning stuff and then eventually doing consulting in the area.
Fantastic. So Adam, I've been a follower of your Machine Learning is Fun blog for years. I think it does an amazing job of explaining things clearly, yet with the type of depth that people want. And congratulations on turning this into an ebook.
Thanks. Yeah, I've been writing this for 4 or 5 years just because I wanted to write down the things I was learning. And I feel like if you can explain something easily, it helps you understand it yourself. And then being able to eventually turn that into a book was super exciting for me.
So tell me a little bit more about kind of the writing, the blog, the type of feedback that you received when you were doing this. So what kind of positive or negative feedback were you getting along the way?
Yeah, the blog is focused on making machine learning accessible to anyone. You know, typically people with some kind of programming or computer background, but trying to take it out of the academic world and being able to show people these are things you could actually use yourself to build real products. And because of that, the one thing that surprised me is I get a lot of people reading it that aren't necessarily developers themselves, but they're like CEOs and product managers and people who just want to know what are the things you could do with machine learning. And a lot of times they give me feedback and they say, well, I feel like I understand it now. I feel like I know what my team is doing. And to me, that's a success if someone who doesn't build it themselves feels like they get it and then can direct the work. I think that's really cool.
Perfect. So, you know, I think, and I'm an old guy, you know, sometimes we got to understand the data. I think that's going to be the most important part. That's the key to making obviously all computing systems work. So if I put things in perspective, I can argue the concept of a database, right, enabled a great leap forward to what computers can do. And one part, of course, was of course querying the database and all the things that could happen. But to get it all started, someone had to create a data model. You know, whether it was a banking model, there would be a balance, an account number, there might be transactions, or if it was an inventory system, there'd be SKUs and costs and names. And you know, you couldn't get the data right without getting the business right or without understanding the business. Fair?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the first step of doing something with data is understanding what that data is and how each piece of data relates to the others. So being able to pull out common things like names and social security numbers is the first step. Because if you don't know what you have, it's not really data you can use.
And product requirements of those times, probably, I think the term at the time was called a business analyst. And now we talk about product management, but it was always that linkage between the technology and the end user.
Right. It was about capturing what the end user was doing or things they were creating and giving the program ways to use that data to produce a result.
And that's the other flip of this, which is going to begin to blur into this discussion of machine learning. But that was the algorithms, of course. What is it that you do with the data? How are you going to get there? So we're going to actually come into algorithms and leave algorithms. We begin to talk about what these new machine learning tools generate.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I guess it's time to figure out if we're about to take a big leap or a small leap, and you're going to probably have to tell me kind of where we are. Take us from data models, where I definitely understand that there's fields and names, to this more complex world of features. What does that really mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in the original days of databases, like you were talking about, you're trying to capture the pieces of data that the program needs to work with, you know, like the customer's name and how they relate to the things they purchased, both the discrete things like customers and items, and then also the linkages between those things. With a feature, what we're trying to do is find pieces of data that correlate with some output. So things that the program needs to know just to ship products and deliver things a customer purchased are not necessarily the same things that correlate with some outcome we want to predict in the prediction model. So with features, we're trying to boil down those pieces of data that we do have, those columns of data in the database, to the ones that are most correlated with the outcome we want to predict. So it's all about kind of boiling down and cleaning up and perfecting that data to the cleanest mapping to the output we want.
And you do need to know, when you talk about the mapping to the output, you kind of need to know the app, the application, the objectives or the algorithm you're kind of looking to run against that. You need to know more than just the data, right?
Yeah, let me give you just a really simple example. Like, I think everybody can relate to hospitals, you know, or a doctor's office. You go in there, you visit, you get something done. Let's say we're trying to predict a patient's outcome, and the data that we collect when they come in is birth date. That's super helpful because that gives us some indication of how old the person was, and probably the patient's age correlates with when they would get a certain procedure done. But what the model really cares about is the patient's age at the time they got the procedure done, not their actual birth date. So in the database, you might have the patient's birth date, but by the time you feed it into a model, you might have cleaned that up and converted it to age at time of service, because that's more correlated with the output. And that'll give the model a better signal.
And that level of bringing data to the model, going back to our earlier example, goes back to data cleansing and making sure you have the best data that can then be acted upon. So it really is a very similar process to what we've done all along with these data systems.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the next step. You know, the first step is to collect the data and understand what you have. The second step is to make sure that data is accurate. And then from there, you can start to do things with that data and create new derivatives of that data that are appropriate for either building a prediction model or feeding into other systems that you have uses for.
And let's talk a little bit about, in some of my research around some of these features. So if it's computer vision, a feature could be something like edges. You would never have that in a transactional data system,
right?
Or the word I kind of always get wrong in speech, it's a phoneme, right? Mm-hmm. There are different things that are relevant for how you're going to apply the tech, right?
Yeah. And if you think about it like this, let's say we have a computer vision system and its goal is to look at the picture and tell us what's in that picture. Is this a picture of a cat or a dog? If our algorithm to make that prediction isn't very sophisticated, we don't want to just feed in a raw picture with a bunch of pixels. We want to feed in like a reduced, simplified representation of that picture, like where the edges are or what colors are in that picture, how much of each color appears. Because that makes the job of the prediction algorithm simpler, because it can look at those kind of boil down features and say, okay, if the color orange is really prominent and there's lots of kind of furry looking edges, that means it's probably a tiger. Whereas like the holy grail, the end result we want to get to, is it can look directly at the image and we haven't done any feature extraction or any kind of extraction of the original data, and it can just pull out the answer right from the original image. So in the history of machine learning, the earlier days were humans figuring out ways to simplify the data, like these pictures, and come up with these simplified features like pulling out edges or pulling out colors, and then giving that to the computer. And then in the modern world with deep learning, the idea is that the model can do more of that. It can look at the picture itself, build its own features from that raw data, and then make a prediction from its own features. So it requires less human input in the whole pipeline, but it requires more data to build that model, because it needs more examples of all the different ways that picture could appear.
So more data allows you to enable to do more automation and have more automatic feature extraction. But my guess is we still don't lose the art as well as the science. So where do we keep the art in this piece of data science feeding machine learning engines?
Yeah, I think if you talk to anybody who builds, for example, image recognition systems, the whole field is just full of like things you learn from experience to make things work. And the difference between a really good system and a really bad system is kind of that tribal knowledge you pick up of like, okay, what size image should I feed into the system? Well, it turns out 512 pixels by 512 pixels works pretty well if I have 10 million images or more. like that kind of stuff, you kind of learn through experience. So even in the modern world where the computer does more of the work in a lot of these algorithms, there's still a lot of art and trial and error to get things to actually work and produce good prediction results with these systems. So that never goes away. But even that being said, day to day, most of the machine learning that gets done in most companies is not deep learning. It's not image recognition. It's usually taking things out of a database, cleaning up that data, and using that to make some kind of prediction for the business. And that's most of what people are doing. And that requires a lot of feature building and feature extraction.
So companies today are likely, as CEOs think about the data that his or her team is working with, they're going to begin to really dig into asking those type of questions. Let's do two examples. So I'm thinking about a Netflix recommendation system. There's still features there that has to be, that they can't, they have to be told that it's a comedy or a drama. I mean, they may know that throwing all this data into the system that if I like movie A, I like movie B, but that may not be sufficient enough. Maybe I do need to know that A's are comedies or dramas or strong female leads or whatever they tell us. Those are still done by humans?
Sort of. So there's kind of two approaches to this. I like to think of them as there being a scale of approaches. On one side of the scale are humans do a lot of work classifying and creating the base data that we're going to use to classify and feed that into a machine. And on the other side of the scale is the computer's doing more and more of that work because it has more data to pull from. So for example, in recommendations, if you have millions and millions of examples of people saying, I like this movie and I don't like this movie, and you have lots of people voting on the same movies, you can actually do some math and work backwards and pull out a profile of each movie based on the correlations between the people. And then you'll end up with clusters of movies. And then what Netflix does is they hand those clusters of movies to people and they say, what is similar about these movies? Like, it looks like the same kinds of people like these movies. Tell me what's similar about the movies. And then after the fact, they go in and say, oh, these are strong female leads set in Atlanta, for example. But that wasn't something that someone fed in the beginning. It's actually something they labeled after the fact. And that's kind of a newer approach of doing this.
Now, is that different or the same as supervised learning?
So supervised learning is just any case where you have some data and you have some outcome that you want to predict, and the machine learns to take that data and figure out that outcome. So like in the image example, this picture has a cat, yes or no? Supervised learning is saying, look at a new image and tell me if this image has a cat, yes or no. When you start doing things like pulling things out of data where you're not telling it upfront what the answer is, that falls more into the unsupervised category. So they're starting to blur the lines at Netflix and do more unsupervised learning, where there's some supervised elements, like the fact that we know which movies people liked, but the fact that we're using that information to then pull new data out, that's the unsupervised part where we're kind of learning things along the way, which is really cool and kind of the future. Because as we get more and more data, there's a lot more data that doesn't have the answer given to us. There's no label with the data. So with unsupervised learning, we can do a lot more with a lot more data that we couldn't do before.
It really is an evolution. So as I think of the model of kind of transactional systems and traditional data models, we move to this world where we begin to do features and labeling. We will be beyond that. But let's talk about some of the apps around it. And here's my thought. I'm going to make a bold leap here. Say even 30 years from now, there'll still be banking transactional systems that are taking your account balance. And when you take $50 out of the ATM, they subtract $50 from your balance. And I'm going to ask you, my sense is AI isn't replacing that. AI might be using around all that data for fraud detection or something. How do these systems coexist?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're exactly right. Like, you know, you think about the old like hierarchy of needs, like you need shelter before you can worry about, you know, your next need, and your next need at the top of the pyramid is love. You know, it's the same thing with data. And to give credit, Hillary Mason from Cloudera has this really great explanation of the evolution of data science in the company. And the foundational layer is you got everything in the database, like everything is in one place. And the second level is you can query that data and do basic reports like how many times I sold something, how many times a customer came to our website. You can answer those basic questions. The third step is you can make basic predictions, like not machine learning, just like a person can sit down with Excel and do a regression and say, oh, I can see trend lines and I can do basic stuff. And then the fourth level is, now that the data is in one place, it's clean, we can make basic predictions, people use that as a source of truth in the company, now we can build machine learning models on top of that to automate harder processes or unlock new value with that data. So it's definitely a hierarchy, and that bottom layer is never going away. And the better and cleaner that bottom layer is, the better you can do everything else. Like, as a consultant in machine learning, I would say 70% of my time is a company comes to me, they say they want to build something really cool with AI, and then we spend 3 months just getting the data from the random databases they have and cleaning it up and stuff. If that was already in place and really good, you could jump right to that last level of building cool models.
So that's a great question for the executive team to be challenging the technical team. So it's fair for the executive team to be questioning what's the data you have and how good and how clean it is. And it's no longer just sufficient to operate the base transactional system. You'll never move up that hierarchy of needs and be able to apply more interesting techniques and come up with more interesting usages and value to what you can do with that data if it's not really in good shape.
Yeah, and a good way, if you're a CEO and you want to test your team and know where you're at really easily, go ask your team to build a report on some random thing and then ask them where they got the data. And if the answer, especially if it's a report that crosses two or three product areas or crosses two or three different domains in your company, and if the answer was, I had to go talk to this team to get this piece of data, and I had to go talk to this other team to get this other piece of data, then I had to clean it up and join it, then you need to fix that problem first before you worry about AI and machine learning, because that means that the company doesn't have its data game together and you're not in a place where you can really leverage your data.
We're coming to a close because this is great. I want people to remember this is kind of a great close. So all about quality data, manage correctly. You can only use machine learning when you're ready. What has happened to algorithms? Are they still around in this ML world, or are they a higher level concept of exploiting what's in the data that you have?
And so the algorithms just get better. And by better, what I mean is, in the old days, the algorithms could work with a little bit of data, but they could only learn relatively simple functions, or they could only model relatively simple systems. And the deep learning algorithms, the newest approaches that get more and more complicated every day, they can learn to do much more complicated things, like, for example, detect faces in the picture and tell you who that person is, or other things that seem much more magical to us. But they need a lot more data to do it. So if you draw a graph, it's like over time, the capability goes up, the data required and the data it can take advantage of goes up too. So the algorithms get better and more capable, but that doesn't mean the old algorithms are any less useful today. Like for me, I still use a lot of these older, simpler algorithms day to day in my work because they're the best fit for the problem I'm working on at the time. And it's more like you have this buffet table of algorithms in front of you that you pick the right one that applies best to the problem based on how much data you have and how hard the problem you're solving is. And I think a secret that CEOs don't hear a lot is that like 80% of the stuff happening in companies are using older, relatively simpler algorithms, not deep learning, and they're getting the job done just fine, whereas you're focusing deep learning on the specific problems where you need that, where the higher infrastructure and computational investment is worth it because the problem's harder and needs that to get it done.
Sounds like there's where the art will lie.
Yes.
So on that note, Adam Geike, this was a pleasure chatting with you. Good luck on the release of the book, and we look forward to chatting with you again.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This was great.